We are in Genesis, getting ready to start chapter 41 today. Before we get started, we had a Sunday school teachers meeting last Sunday, and had a discussion on the direction of the Sunday school classes. For this coming quarter, of course, I told Daryl I wanted to continue in Genesis, to get through with Genesis. I think we're going to get done fairly quick, because the rest of the Genesis, most of it's just narrative. So I think we're going to go through it pretty quick, I think. But we'll run out of it before the quarter's out, so I'm thinking what I'll do is just roll over into Exodus for a while, because during our meeting, it's my understanding that they're going to try something new with the Sunday school classes after this next quarter, that they're going to try to sync the pastor's message and the Sunday school class teachings somehow. Topical kind of thing. They've not come out in detail. They've been talking about this for about 6 months or so. But right now they're talking about implementing it after this next quarter. I don't know exactly when that's going to be. You know, another 3 or 4 months. So I don't want to get started on some kind of series or another chapter or something. And Exodus, you know, sort of rolls on from Genesis chronologically. So I don't know what kind of material we'll have or anything like that, but that's, from what I understand, the plan is right now, is after next quarter to try to sync all, at least all adult Sunday school classes with the message that the pastor's going to be teaching that Sunday. Got my own ideas about that, but we'll see how it works. Okay, chapter 41 of Genesis. We're continuing in the story of Joseph. Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers because they were jealous of him. That was the lesser of the evils, they thought, to sell him into slavery instead of killing him. So he's sold into slavery when he's 17, or maybe a little bit later. Taken by Ishmaelite caravan to Egypt and sold to Potiphar, who was an official of the Egyptian court and captain of guard. And he served Potiphar for a while, and he was so impressed with Joseph's abilities and management that he put him in charge of the whole household. And Potiphar's wife got her eye on him and tried to tempt him, and he didn't fall for temptation. So she was a spurn woman, and she's going to get him, and she ambushed him and set him up and accused him of sexual assault, which he didn't, of course. But, you know, men are seem like guilty until proven innocent when you talk about stuff like that. So he was put in prison. Potiphar is thought to have been the captain of the prison. He could very easily have executed Joseph, but I think he probably had mercy on him, and he probably knew, his wife probably wasn't telling the whole story. And so instead of executing Joseph, he just put him in prison. And in prison, he did such a good job that the jailer put him in charge of running things in the prison. So his life in prison wasn't nice, but it was a whole lot better than it could have been, probably. And he had that much trust placed in him by the jailer there to be put in charge of a lot of things. And then the chief butler and the chief baker of Pharaoh had some kind of falling out, and they were placed in prison waiting for their case to be heard. And Joseph was put in charge of them as their servant kind of thing. And it was as if God had placed a couple royal tutors there to prepare him to preparing for his duties that what God had planned for him. And those two had dreams. Joseph interpreted dreams. And one was going to be restored to his position, the butler. And the baker was going to be hanged, and that transpired. And Joseph had asked the chief butler to remember him when he got restored to his position. And oftentimes, the case, people that we ask to remember us sort of forget about us sometimes because of the situations, distractions, or whatever. So that's sort of where we left off last Sunday. Joseph's still in prison. His guy that probably could have got him out, the butler, had not said anything favorable to Pharaoh about him. So we pick up chapter 41 today. Okay. And it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river. And behold, there came up out of the river 7 well-favored kine. Now this is King James, Old English. If you've got a different translation, it probably says cows or something. But King James says kine, K-I-N-E. And fat-fleshed, and they fed in a meadow. And behold, 7 other kine came up after them out of the river, ill-favored and lean-fleshed, and stood by the other kine upon the bank of the river. And the ill-favored and lean kine did eat up the 7 well-favored and fat kine. So Pharaoh awoke. And he slept and dreamed a second time. And behold, 7 ears of corn came up upon one stalk, rank and good. And behold, 7 thin ears, and blasted with the east wind, sprung up after them. And the 7 thin ears devoured the 7 rank and full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled. And he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof. And Pharaoh told them his dream. But there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. Okay, it's 2 years later. Joseph's been sitting in prison for 2 years, hoping that the chief baker would plead his case or something before Pharaoh, and didn't happen. So we have this thing that transpires where Pharaoh has 2 dreams. Now, you might ask why 2, and they're very similar. And we'll be told that later on, but in Scripture, you couldn't take action on the authority of one witness. You had to have at least 2 witnesses. And in Revelation, when we have the 2 witnesses in Revelation, 2 of them, so it's believable, I guess you'd say. And here we got 2 dreams, one very similar to the other one. And the first one disturbed Pharaoh so much, he woke up. Now, that's never happened to any of us, has it? Mm-hmm. You have a dream and something traumatic happens, or something that just totally offends you or something like that, and you wake up just like you're wide awake. And you remember it. Sometimes you don't, but usually you seem like I remember it. And it's so hard to get back to sleep because you think, why did I dream that? You know, I didn't eat anything strange before I went to bed. I don't have anything troubling me. And how come this kind of stuff pops into my mind, you know? And you wonder if there's some kind of subconscious thing there that you had to deal with, maybe, I don't know. But Pharaoh was troubled. So he goes back to sleep, and he has a very similar dream again. And he wakes up real troubled. Now, I was curious, so I looked up about corn. Anybody a corn farmer? I didn't know how many ears grows on a stalk of corn. But it's what I looked up is nowadays it's just 1 ear on a stalk of corn, they say, especially in a big field. I would have thought there'd been several. But there's as many as 6 ears of corn can be. Depends on how they've genetically engineered it and all that kind of stuff. Well,
this isn't corn, though. This is,
well,
this is corn in the generic sense of grain.
So yeah.
Corn came from New World.
Yeah.
So it's, it's wheat, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one interpretation of it, is wheat. Yeah. Or maize or something like that. And several commentaries I read, one of them said could have been wheat too, the way it's translated. Anyway, whatever it was, you know, whether wheat or corn or whatever, it was unusual that it had seven heads on it, or seven ears on it. And not only that, another one grew up with seven ears. So that was unusual in itself. And in the Bible, the number seven has a meaning of spiritual completeness, whether good or bad spiritual. It can be bad occultic kind of completeness or bad good spiritual kind of completeness. But seven is completeness in the spiritual world. So everything he's looking at is sevens here. So that has a significance, I think. But the lean cows ate the fat cows, which cows don't eat cows. And the lean ears ate the, you know, full ears, and corn don't eat each other. So, you know, he's really disturbed about all this, and he wants the answer to it. And he calls his magicians, which in this case, the word magicians has something to, has a meaning of like a something divination or something to do with a cult or something like that, you know. Okay, verse 9. Then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, I do remember my faults this day. And Pharaoh was wroth with his servants, and put me in ward in the captain of the guard's house, both me and the chief baker. And we dreamed a dream one night, I and he. We dreamed each man according to the interpretation of his dream. And there was there with us a young man, a Hebrew servant, to the captain of the guard. And we told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams. Each man according to his dream he did interpret. And it came to pass as he interpreted to us. So it was me he restored unto mine office, and him he hanged. So after these two dreams, and Pharaoh can't find somebody to interpret them for him, the chief butler just happens to remember, and thinking that probably he'll get some kind of reward if he can get Joseph to interpret for Pharaoh. You know, before there was nothing to his benefit. He had no reason to remember Joseph. But now he might get in good with Pharaoh if he gets his dream interpreted. So that sort of jogs his memory and his conscience a little bit, probably, to try to get Joseph in to interpret Pharaoh's dream. Okay, 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. So Joseph being in prison at least 2 years, probably three or four, you know, because 2 years since the butler's left, he's been in prison quite a while. He probably don't get to change clothes that often. Says he shaved, so just the normal hygienes are probably lacking a little bit in prison. But they get him all cleaned up and spiffied up again before Pharaoh. Sort of like when you go before promotion board or something. That's probably the best you ever looked in your uniform in your life, you know. But they get them all cleaned up and shined up before Pharaoh. But he was fairly modest before him. You know, Pharaoh says, you know, I've heard you interpret dreams. And basically says, it's not me. You know, I don't have that ability. It's only God, through God, that dreams can be interpreted, basically. And he tells Pharaoh he'll have an answer of peace. And the word peace there is shalom. And there's a lot of nuances to the Hebrew word of shalom. But basically he's saying and telling him that God will give him an answer that'll set his mind at ease, to where he won't be left wondering about his dreams, I guess you'd say. The Septuagint translates it as, God shall announce Pharaoh's salvation. Looking at Hebrew, I don't get that, but that's the way they say that the Septuagint translates. The Septuagint was the Greek translation of the Hebrew text about 200 or 300 years before Christ was born.
Well, could it be maybe just saving him from the dilemma of his dreams?
Possibly. Mm-hmm. But one night, or one day, Joseph is in prison. The next day, he's in Pharaoh's court. And we have to keep reminding, at least I do, have to keep reminding myself there's nothing too difficult for God to do. Mm-hmm. Things that look like is absolutely impossible, God can find a way. Mm-hmm. And we just got to keep trusting in him. And you got to be patient too. Look how long he's in prison, you know. Going from a fairly a good situation in Potiphar's house to prison, and now he's in Pharaoh's court. Okay, 17. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, in my dream, behold, I stood upon the bank of the river, and behold, there came up out of the river 7 kine, fat-fleshed and well-favored, and they fed in the meadow. And behold, 7 other kine came up after them, poor, very ill-favored, lean-fleshed, such as I never saw in all the land of Egypt for badness. And the lean and the ill-favored kine did eat up the first 7 fat kine. And when they had eaten them up, it could not be known that they had eaten them. But they were still ill-favored as at the beginning. So I awoke. And I saw in my dream, behold, 7 ears came up in one stalk, full and good. And behold, 7 ears withered thin and blasted with the east wind sprung up after them. And the thin ears devoured the 7 good ears. And I told this unto the magicians, and there was none that could declare it to me. And Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God has showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good kine are 7 years. And the 7 good ears are 7 years. And a dream is one. And the 7 thin and ill-favored kind that came up after them are 7 years. And the 7 empty years blasted with the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. And this is the thing which I have spoken unto Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he showeth unto Pharaoh. Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. And there shall arise after them 7 years of famine, and all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine shall consume the land. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine following it, for it shall be very grievous. And for that dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice. It is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land, and take up the 5th part of the land of Egypt in the 7 plenteous years, and let them gather all the food of those good years that come, and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let him keep food in the cities, that the food shall be for store in the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine. So he gets his explanation. Pharaoh, one of the things that he emphasizes is the dream that, reason it bothered him so much is the lean cows he saw, he'd never seen any of that lean in all of Egypt. I mean, they were just terrible. And even after they ate the fat cows, it still hadn't changed any. They were still lean. So that really bothered him. So, but why a famine? Why a famine in Egypt? why is God doing this? Well, back in Genesis, when God was covenanting with Abram, even before he became Abraham, God prophesied what was going to happen to Abram's descendants. In Genesis 15, verses 13 and 14, Genesis chapter 15, 13 and 14, and he said unto Abram, know of a surety that thou shalt be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years, and also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterwards shall they come out with great substance. So God had already prophesied to Abram that what we're going to see happening now and into Exodus, God's already told Abram years ago that this is going to happen. And now God is working his plan to make this happen. How are you going to make 70-something people move from Israel down to Egypt? I mean, because that's what God has promised them. Well, if there's no food there, they're going to go where there's food. And how's there going to be food in Egypt if God don't have somebody in charge of the food storage when before he sends the famine? So when we start looking at the Bible and all these kind of things are piecing together and you see the prophecies, it's just wow. You know? God got a plan to make all this stuff work to carry out his prophecies. And I don't know about you, but in my life, I can look back at some not so nice times in my life. And at the time I was going through them, I said, what in the world is going on? But when I look back, I can see God working on me, you know. We usually have pretty good hindsight. We can't see ahead or can't see right now today sometimes. But we can look back on our life and see God's hands at work in our life and guiding us and moving us in a direction that we should go. And I often wonder what degree of our free will, if we just said, nope, ain't doing that, God, what would have happened? But here it seems as if Joseph is tuned in to what God would have him to do. Looking at Joseph, I don't see where he got it from Jacob, though. You know, Jacob, don't seem like he was that close to God. So it makes you wonder how Joseph got that closeness to God to be the kind of person he was.
Rough times.
Well, yeah.
He's sold into slavery. He's got plenty of time to think and and reach out and in prison.
Well, too oftentimes, you know, maybe even his father, and, you know, his father had the vision of the staircase going up to heaven, and, you know, things that we tell our children, we don't know what kind of impacts it has on their lives sometimes. And both positive and negative, you know, things that we talk about, you know, just among the family. And maybe he picked up some of that when Jacob's telling stories about his experience encountering God in Bethel or something. But God is using a famine. He's going to be moving the whole family of Jacob or Israel from Canaan down to Egypt to fulfill a prophecy that he gave to Abraham. And now Joseph has told Pharaoh what is going to be. And he comes up with a strategy for Pharaoh too. Says you need to find somebody to store up in the fat years.
I was wondering about that. Is that part of the dream, or does this just kind of instruction that?
That's coming from Joseph. I mean, I guess that's a it's not part of interpretation of the dream, I don't think. But well, it may be in that the lean are eating up the fat, mm-hmm. So you store up the fat for the lean years, and.
But you know, Joseph wasn't talking about himself really. He's not trying to get himself.
He's not making his resume available to Pharaoh. Okay, verse 37. And the thing was good in Pharaoh's eyes, in other words, storing up food, and in the eyes of all the servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this is a man in whom the Spirit of God is. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house according unto thy word, shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, and put a gold chain around his neck, and he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, bow the knee, and he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paaneah, something like that, and gave him to wife Ashenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. And Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt.
Wow.
From a servant in prison to the second in command of Egypt, almost overnight. Of course, we don't get the right timeline here. It may have been some kind of process going on where they're trying to find the right kind of guy to do what Joseph had recommended. And I mean, we've seen those kind of things happen before when somebody goes out to search for a certain type of employee, and they got somebody right there in house, but after they do the search, they said, we'll just take this guy. He's as good as any that we're looking at, or something like that, you know. So the commentaries seem to think it was some kind of vetting period where they were looking for the right kind of person. It wasn't just like a overnight kind of thing. But, you know, scripture, we got to sort of get that impression that it happened immediately. And it could have, I don't know. We're just not told. But Joseph was selected to be in charge. Now, one of the things that some of the commentaries think, can we open the door?
I turned the air conditioner down, it didn't come on. One of the things that the commentaries are saying is that this time period in Egypt, that they think it was a time period where some foreigners had came in and taken over Egypt, and they were from the Middle East. And they call them Hyksos, H-Y-K-S-O-S, and that they may have been more predisposed to having Joseph there as the ruler because they were the same ethnic kind of background or something. I don't know. But and that might explain later on why when this group of people were thrown out of power, they were foreigners there in Egypt, that then the Israelites became slaves there. So that might explain all that. But Pharaoh, recognized Joseph's God. He calls him Elohim. And even if you worship some other kind of God, he could still recognize that the God of Joseph was powerful and that Joseph was filled with the Spirit of God. And where he says Spirit of God in verse 36, he uses the term, Hebrew term, Ruach Elohim. And that's, Ruach is a term that's Hebrew words used for spirit throughout the Old Testament. And he calls him Elohim. So, at least he recognizes Joseph's God. And he was second in command of all of Egypt. Now, we saw Joseph in a similar position earlier in Potiphar's house. He was second, you know, only under Potiphar, ruler over all of he had. And it was as if God was giving him a similar, lower level job to prepare him for something better. And then, you know, going to prison, he humbled him. Joseph didn't become depressed. Well, he probably did to a degree because of his situation, but still, he had his relationship with God, and he's still willing and prepared to move wherever God had it would have him to move, and he moved up into the royal court. And God had used this time period from the time he sold in slavery up until this time, you know, like I said earlier, like the the parable about the talents. He did well in little, so he's given more responsibility. God was just preparing him for something bigger and better. And now, he has enough power, if he wants to, he can go back and get Potiphar's wife. He can do her in if he wants to, probably. But that's not the kind of person he is. He's not a vengeful person. And we don't see that anywhere in Joseph's character, any kind of vengefulness.
So he seems able to discern that his time in prison was a time for God, that God was using that time.
Yeah.
It must be hard to take revenge on somebody when...
Even in more modern times, Bunyan, when he was in prison, he wrote the Pilgrim's Progress. I mean, a lot of times when people are in prison, they don't want to be there, you know. But they're in a situation where they can do things that will benefit them later, you know. So, and it seems as if Joseph used whatever situation he was in to the best of his ability to glorify God. Mm-hmm. And that's difficult to do sometimes. It's really, you know, especially when you're in a job you don't really like, you know. Or in a situation it's trying. But yeah, Joseph had enough power to do basically anything he wanted, and we don't see any kind of revenge or vengefulness in him. His name that was given, and this sort of confuses me, Zaphnath-Paaneah. Looked in several commentaries. And a lot of disagreement on it. I'll just read off everything that here that they say it could mean. One thing is revealer of a secret. And that's, they say, the Hebrews say that's what it means. Egyptians say it means preserver of the age. Blue Letter Bible means treasury of the glorious rest. And then I saw another commentary where it listed some others from other commentaries. The salvation of the word, rescuer of the world, prince of the life of the world, the food of life, or the food of the living. So all that, all these people can't agree, all these scholars can't agree exactly what the name means. But all those have some kind of reference to a savior, to save the people. And if we're looking at Joseph as a type or a model of Christ, then that fits. That he is basically going to save the known world at that time from starvation. Okay, verse 46. And Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. And in the 7 plenteous years, the earth brought forth by handfuls. And he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities, the food of the field that was round about every city. Laid he up the same. And Joseph gathered corn as sand of the sea, very much until he left numbering, for it was without number. And unto Joseph were born 2 sons before the years of famine came, which Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bare unto him. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God, said he, hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second was called Ephraim, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. And the 7 years of plenteousness that was in the land of Egypt were ended. So he did what he told Pharaoh he was going to do. When he took that office, it says he's 30 years old. So when he went to Egypt, he's 17, maybe 18, depends on how long it takes him to get there. So from 17 to 30 is 13 years. We know he spent 2+ years in prison. So that's probably down to about 10. So maybe 10 years in Potiphar's house. It probably took him a while to work his way up to a position of authority, you know. So maybe around 7 years in Potiphar's house is authority there. Maybe 3 or so years in prison. And now he's 30 years old and he's a second ruler of Egypt. From a shepherd boy in Canaan to the second ruler of Egypt in 13 years. And being in prison part of that time too. Yeah, it's strange how God does things, isn't it? But he was storing up all the food, and it says without number. He was trying to count it for a while and just give up. You know, God is blessing Egypt so much with so much food, there's no use in counting it. I get so frustrated at work now. We've got contractors, you know, doing things at work. And we've got to do all this paperwork, make sure they're getting the things done on time and stuff like that. And they've got to respond to the paperwork. And what we're doing, we're slowing down them doing the job, you know, because we're trying to account for everything. And I get frustrated with that kind of stuff. And that seems like what was happening here. There's so much stuff, wasn't no use to count it. You're wasting your time. If they started counting everything they were putting away, it would take away from putting away the stuff, you know. So they just concentrating on what they were supposed to do by putting the stuff in storage instead of trying to count what they was putting away. And not only was Egypt blessed in the 7 years of plenty, Joseph was blessed too with two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And we've talked about the sons and the tribes and stuff like that before. And Manasseh and Ephraim is going to play a significant role throughout the rest of the Old Testament as tribes of Egypt. We talked about a little bit, Manasseh, when they get into the promised land, the tribe of Manasseh even splits it so big into East Manasseh and West Manasseh, and they're called the half-tribes of Manasseh. And then Ephraim also has a pretty big portion. And after the rule of Solomon, you know, Solomon fell out of favor with God, and the nation of Israel split in two, generally along this line right here. And in the southern portion, it was called Judah. In the northern portion, it was called Israel. But certain places in the Bible where the Holy Spirit doesn't want to use the word Israel, oftentimes they'll use the word Ephraim to talk about the northern part. And Ephraim was just above the Mason-Dixon line for Israel here, you know. So oftentimes the northern part, and you have to know these kind of things when you read the Bible to follow what's going on, you know. So oftentimes when it says Ephraim, if you don't know that that's one of the tribes of Israel, and that oftentimes the northern kingdom is called Ephraim instead of Israel, you sort of get lost in your reading. But Manasseh and Ephraim are going to play a significant role throughout the rest of the Old Testament. And when they're listening to the 12 tribes, because they've got Manasseh and Ephraim up there, they've got 12 areas identified. You don't see Levi because they got the cities spread out in the different tribal areas, and they only had cities. The word Manasseh means causing to forget. And Joseph, even though he was second ruler of Egypt, he was still homesick. You know, don't make any difference what kind of home life we had, you know. And if when we turn 18 or whatever and anxious to get away from home, there's still that draw to go back home and see the family and stuff like that. Whatever kind of relationship you had with your family, you know, you still have that feeling to some degree that you want to go back and be with them, see how things are going and stuff. And Joseph was homesick. But he couldn't leave as a slave. He definitely couldn't leave while he's in prison. And he's got royal responsibilities now and he can't leave. So he's really homesick. And having his first child has a lot to do with softening that feeling of homesickness. So it's causing him to forget some. And then Ephraim, double fruitfulness. I guess that's got to do with maybe a second son. Being the second one, it's double his joy or double his fruitfulness or whatever. And it just helps him to just accept his situation as it is. Still has that longing for home, and we'll see that later, but does a lot to help him in his daily dealings with his responsibilities, have a couple of children. And children change our life so much when we have children, too. I think it's really difficult for a person to understand the significance of being a child of God if we don't have our own children, you know, or if we don't have a relationship with our parents like we should have. You know, a lot of people, if they have a real bad relationship with their father, and we call God our Heavenly Father, they get some kind of negative connotation there sometimes. But us having children, I think it helps us to understand our relationship with God. And Egypt here is a type of world in which we live. Joseph don't belong in Egypt any more than we belong in this world. We're citizens of another world, of child of God. Joseph is a citizen or part of another world too, even though he's in Egypt. But he's making the best of what he can while he's there, still longing for home. And as children of God, we should be longing for our heavenly home too. So Egypt is a type of that. Okay, verse 54. And the 7 years of dearth began to come, according as Joseph had said. And dearth was in all the land, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, go unto Joseph. What he saith to you, do. And the famine was over all the face of the earth. And Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians. And the famine waxed sore in the land of Egypt. And all the countries came into Egypt to Joseph to buy corn, because the famine was so sore in all the lands. Famine in all the known world. The physical famine that Joseph was dealing with is a sort of model or a type of the spiritual famine that we have to deal with today, and probably have to deal with in the future. You know, have we stored up enough of spiritual food in our lives to deal with those times when we have a spiritual famine, or when we have to assist somebody that's going through a time of spiritual darkness? Have we stored up, are we equipped? Have we taken our time when we've not been maybe challenged by Satan or something like that, to store up our knowledge and our relationship with God and so forth, to where we're fully armed, fully equipped, fully provided to deal with those empty times? Okay, got time to go into chapter 32 for a little bit here. We can get a few verses in there. Okay, 1 through chapter 42, verses 1 through 4. Now when Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt, Jacob said unto his sons, why do ye look one upon another? And he said, behold, I've heard that there's corn in Egypt. Get you down thither and buy for us from thence, that we may live and not die. And Joseph's 10 brethren went down to buy corn in Egypt. But Benjamin, Joseph's brother, Jacob sent not with his brethren, for he said, least peradventure mischief befall him.